chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? I'm just tired and a kite. I'm just having great fun this week. Hope you're having a good week too. I'm back in the kitchen. I just got home today from another shift at the coffee shop where I've been working as a prep baker, and I am loving it. I got to crack 48 eggs in a row today. Yes, I did. It's been a long time. There's nothing more satisfying than, for me anyways, than working with larger quantities. Crack a bunch of eggs, zest a bunch of lemons, you know, whisk up some things, lots of whisking with big bowls, lots of scooping, whether I'm scooping scones or scooping cookies. So my left bicep and shoulder is just powerful. Even after just a handful of days doing this, I'm telling you, I'm gonna fool somebody at an arm wrestling competition if I remember to use my left arm anyways. I kind of didn't know how much I missed being in the kitchen. You know, when I'm just working short shifts, like I'm doing 4-hour shifts, which is nice bite-sized chunks actually, but I can get a lot done in 4 hours. They seem happy. And so, yeah, so everything's going all right. But we did have one mishap, and it's funny, I had a mishap with a batch of cookies where Lindsay, the woman that I'm working with, wanted to try something different because she had extra caramel on hand and said, well, why don't we like swirl it in like you'd swirl it in with ice cream after you mix the cookie? And I thought, okay, well, it's going to be pretty sweet and pretty runny. And you know what? It was pretty sweet and pretty runny. And so we made some adjustments and we fixed it and stuff. But it was one of those things where the science of baking really came in, right? Like, you know, this caramel, this semi-solid sugar is gonna bake out when you bake this cookie and run like crazy. And it did. Chalk one up for baking education that we anticipated that this was going to happen, gave it a try, and already had a fix in mind. And speaking of baking education, today on the show, I talk with Karen Bornarth, who is the new executive director of the Bread Bakers Guild of America. And they are all about education. Huh? See what I did there? A little bit of a segue. So yeah, Karen's on the show and we have a really, really good talk. She's been part of the baking scene in the States for years and years and years. I actually met her 15 years ago at a baking event. She just keeps on popping up. She's worked at Amy's Breads. She's taught at the French Culinary Institute. She's been an instructor at guild events through the years. She worked at Hot Bread Kitchen for many years, you know, on the workforce training side of things. And now she's recently moved over to be the new executive director of the Bread Bakers Guild, which is, I think, fantastic. So we talk with Karen. She's going to give us the lowdown on her first few months in the job and where she sees the guild going and kind of what's it for, you know, and why the guild that is now coming up to being 30 years old is still vital and relevant and important for bakers in the States and around the world, really. So we talk with her in just a couple of minutes' time. But what else is going on? Let's see, winter has come to the West Coast out here in Victoria. That means it's raining and it's chilly in the morning, but it's not like freezing or snow or blizzarding or anything. The folks back in Saskatchewan got a lot of snow. I know that. Our daughter Robin is Robin, who does the theme song for the show. That little ukulele original composition by Robin Dick. That's her contribution to the show. She's back in England and back teaching school. Flew like did the 9-hour flight and then the 3 hours on the train and went to bed and got up in the middle of the night. Then tried to sleep a few more hours and got right back into the thick of it at school. So I hope the vacation was worth it because she maximized the vacation time and minimized any recovery time before school started. Yeah. And so we're out trying to go for walks and hikes and that kind of stuff when the weather clears, which it does kind of every day, but it also rains every day. So it's nice. And as long as you're not out walking around in the rain, it's good. Yeah. What can I tell you? This is what I sound like after I bake. I sound happy. I hope I sound happy because I sure am. All right. Let's talk with Karen. I wanted to talk with Karen right when she got the job because I knew her kind of, sort of, like we've passed in baking things and stuff. And she actually taught a course that I attended a long, long time ago. But we don't really know each other well at all. And I thought when she got this new exec director position, I thought, well, it'd be a good chance to talk with her. And then I got smart for a change. And I said, you know, why don't we wait a little bit until she sort of sees what the job's all about? And then we can talk. And so it's been about 3 or 4 months now. So I figured now is a good time. So here we go. A talk with a really excellent baker and a very important person in terms of the amount of time and effort she's given to the baking community over a long period of time. And now the new executive director of the Bread Bakers Guild of America, it's Karen Bornarth. Here we go.
It's nice to see you. I've heard your voice so much. I feel like I know you, but it's nice to see your face.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. There's no way I would expect you to remember this, but we actually have met once before. I was, it was 2008, Women of the Guild classes. And I was a fanboy of the Women of the Guild because I had just joined that year. And the class was up in Edmonton that Tracy Mazzolini was teaching. And you,
yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is great. I've just joined the Bread Bakers Guild. They run classes in Canada all the time. And so, yeah, so I went up to Edmonton, and that was the first time I met Tracy as well. And the whole bakery for me was just, that was the dream.
Nice.
And that was the weekend that I actually said to other people that this is what I wanted to do. Yeah. And
you that's were awesome. My class,
so, yeah. And then other than that, it's been sort of like, from a distance, the odd wheat stalk kind of a thing. But
yeah, well, we are planning some programming in Canada next year. So we're hoping to go back to
The
Northern Alberta site, but Toronto, we're talking with Matt Duffy. I'm blanking the name of his school, but I'm doing something there. So we hope to bring programming closer to you.
That's okay. Yeah, it's all good. Goodness me. I was at 2018's wheat stock out in Rhode Island, but when we had the retail bakery, I made it out to Austin once. I made it out to Seattle once for a class, you know, especially now with COVID. Yeah. The last couple of years, it seems like, I kind of remember going to face-to-face things. Yeah, yeah. They were fun. Yeah.
Well, put it on your calendar. Wheat stock is coming in 24.
Oh, cool.
Early March. We don't have the exact dates nailed down yet, but I hope that
we will. Yeah. Well, I will be entering the lottery for sure. They're always a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So cool. Yeah. So it's great to get to talk to you in that. So you've been executive director now for a few months.
Since July.
Since July. Yeah. Okay. So it's been 3-4 months now. So how's that going?
It's good. You know, it's funny. I've been a member of the guild for 20 odd years.
Yeah.
So in many ways, it kind of, you know, feels like coming home again. But obviously, I'm experiencing the organization in a very different way. But it's nice to be home again and to have seen and talked with a lot of, you know, people I've known for a long time and may not have talked to for many years, but also meet new people, you know, people who joined the guild in more recent years who I haven't had the opportunity to connect with. And it's nice to see that there's still so much energy and excitement and enthusiasm for the work of the guild. And I'm just excited for the possibilities. You know, the last few months have just been kind of like, let me get a handle on the day to day, you know, so we can keep the ship on course. And then, yeah, let me start dreaming about the future a little bit. And I just made a key hire, which you may know, Melina Kelson. Do you know Melina?
I know her, sure.
Of course. Yeah. In the education role, and she's so perfect for that job. And so I feel like I have a great partner in place now, and we're really dreaming big for next year and beyond as we hope we'll come out of you know, COVID circumstances and more travel and in-person activities will be possible. We want to deliver a great slate of in-person programming, but still keep the virtual stuff going because it's an amazing format, you know, to meet people all around the world and make it super accessible.
I wasn't thinking about that till you said it, but one of the things that I noticed was with the virtual events, just from reading the newsletters, was that you're just able to do so many more of them, right? Because the variety can increase and the variety of instructors can increase and because, you know, well, because I've been like I say, a member since 2008 anyways. So it's, you know, a fairly decent amount of time and you sort of long enough to see trends or to see sort of peaks and valleys. And there's times where it's like, you can tell you're leaning on the same six people to kind of run, to kind of get make everything happen. And then it kind of expands out and then it kind of shrinks in and then, you know, and you drag Solvay back into it. And then, you know, that's kind of how it goes, right?
Well, there will always be a place for Solvay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and you, in that same breath, right? Like when the announcement came out about you getting the executive director job, it's like, yeah, like, of course, you know, it's sort of like, it's like she was available, like all that, because you've been a big part of the guild, probably behind the scenes throughout, but visibly as a member, you know, yeah. You can see like every, like there's sort of a, it's like the, you know, the orbit. It's like, oh, Karen's back involved for a bit and then she's off doing another thing. And yeah.
That's the amazing thing about it though. I mean, I think it's great that people can tap into it as they need and as they want. I'm looking for expansion. I want to grow the tent and bring in more folks, but still keep those folks who've been with the organization for 30 years, some of the members, you know, keep them still involved and really tap into that expertise.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And again, when I saw the thing about Melina, I was like, well, yeah, of course. Right. Like she's,
We did, I will say we did a very rigorous search and there was a lot of interest in that job and a number of really talented people who came to the surface. And she was clearly at the top of that, but it was great that there were so many people who were interested in the work of the guild and in joining that work. And so that was exciting because I wasn't sure, you know, when we put that job description out there, if it would get much traction, but it got a lot of traction from a lot of really serious and talented people. And Melina was first on that list. And I'm thrilled that it worked out. Really thrilled.
You've had a long and varied career in baking. Like, you know, back when I first met you, I think you were at the French Culinary Institute? Was that where you were? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But even before that, like, do I remember this right? Like you were part of Amy's Breads in the early days as well, right?
I was.
Yeah.
That's where I got started. Yeah. I did a little baking and pastry program at the CIA out at Greystone, a 30-week program. This was after a very short-lived career in academic publishing and a degree in English literature. So much to my parents' dismay, I said, I'm going to go be a pastry chef. I thought I wanted to be a pastry chef. But as I got into that program, I realized that I am a bread baker. And I think that we are different types of people often. And anyhow, when I finished that program, I was really fortunate to meet Amy Sherber because she came out to the school where they were doing a bread conference. And I said, hey, I'm coming back to New York and I have a job. And she said, do you want to work at night and make pastry? And I said, no, but I'll take that job. And I did and quickly moved over to bread. I spent about 7 years with her on the night shift the whole time, which was intense, but it was incredible. It was an amazing time. And it really felt like being involved in a sport. You know, it was so intensely physical and so team oriented. And I'd never played team sport. So it was my first team sport, but it was awesome.
Was that in the Hell's Kitchen, like the original tiny space?
When I started working for her, she was producing still in Hell's Kitchen and in the Chelsea Market. So she was running a little organic line at bread out of Hell's Kitchen. And so I'd spend a couple nights each week up there. And that was a solo shift. And I would produce 400 or 500 kilos of bread on my own. I don't know how I did that. I was younger, I was faster, I was stronger. And then I'd spend a couple nights a week in the Chelsea Market with the team on the baguette shift, where we would, I don't know, I mean, it fluctuated and it grew, but we usually around 1,000 baguettes and a few thousand dinner rolls for morning service. And that was a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That shift, very hard work, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. Well, and do you remember, did you work with Sarah Black at Amy's?
You know, I have known Sarah forever, but she and I did not overlap at Amy's, but, you know, all through, and I actually was just talking with her a couple weeks ago. She's talking about putting together some education. I spent a little time together at the Artisan Baking Center, which is in Queens. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember the Queens thing.
Yeah, it was a part of the Consortium for Worker Education. So it was actually that was my first exposure to workforce development, was teaching in that program. And it was run by the AFL-CIO. And yeah, they were just doing great things out there in a like very serious baking and culinary program. And so I taught part-time in that program. And I got to know Sarah a little bit there because she was running the baking center for a while.
Yeah, I talked to Sarah last year for the show. And so that's one of the things that always fascinates me, is how people cross paths in different, you know, and then so start layering the locations and then the times up, and you start really realizing how connected everyone is here, you know? Yeah.
And how we can kind of, we go apart, but we come back together again. Right.
Yeah. And then you spent time at Hot Bread Kitchen as well, right?
Yeah. After Amy's, I went to teach. That was the French Culinary Institute. I spent about 5 years there. That became the International Culinary Center. And unfortunately, that's gone. And I ran the bread program there with a couple of folks, Johnson Yu and Roger Garral, two very talented teachers and bakers. And then from there, I actually went to Le Pain Quotidien, which is an international franchise, a bakery cafe started in Belgium. And I worked mainly in product development for them for about 5 years. And then it was Hot Bread Kitchen.
Okay.
And that's where I was most recently. And I spent 8 years there in workforce development primarily. And Hot Bread got its name because when I started there, it operated a commercial bakery with a workforce program embedded in it. But through the years, the program evolved and became kind of a standalone culinary training program.
Oh, okay.
It was an incredible organization. I actually just went to a fundraiser last night for Hot Bread, and it's just amazing how it's grown and what it's become and the kind of recognition it has. And it will always have a place in my heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I talked to Paywin Lee, like one of the very first shows that we did, because when I did my short list of, okay, I'm going to start a podcast and who are the people I wanted to talk to? I wanted to talk to somebody at Hot Bread Kitchen because we had just got the book and we're reading all about the education part of it and the empowering women and empowering immigrants and bringing, you know, breads from all over the world. And so, yeah, I talked with her and had a really good chat. And so, yeah, so I've been running kind of parallel to you for a while. And then so from Hot Bread, is that, and then it was moving to the Guild?
Yeah. So I left Hot Bread in July and started the Guild at the same time. And, you know, it's interesting. I've been at Hot Bread for 8 years and I absolutely love it. I mean, that organization is really kind of a part of my DNA and I learned so much. But I was starting to think, you know, maybe it's time to move on. You know, you just get that itch. And I'd been looking and there was nothing. And then there was this job with the Guild. And I said, it's like they put my resume into a job description. You know, it's all of the interests, all of the passion, all of the experiences I've had through the years. And it felt like such a great fit. And I'm so glad that the board agreed. But I bring, you know, a lot of what I learned at Hot Bread Kitchen about fundraising, about operations, about running an organization to the Guild. And I also really bring the lens of workforce and small business development, because that to me is what the Guild is really about. You know, if you look at our membership, it is a lot of small bakeries.
Yeah.
Those small bakeries, they they, you know, have a lot of workforce. You know, so there's a lot of business there, a lot of opportunity there. And there's also a lot of challenges, which I don't need to tell you. I mean, it's such a challenging time right now for anybody hiring, particularly in food, though. And so I think the Guild has a role to play in supporting those businesses and their workforce so that they can thrive and they can be resilient. And so that when I think about the Guild and I think about the work of our future, I want to make sure that we're focused on the business part of things. And not just on the baking part of things.
Yeah.
And that we're really getting, yeah, that we're really getting production bakers involved. You know, I was so lucky to get involved with the Guild early on in my career. I don't know if I would have stuck with the industry if I hadn't met the Guild, because it gave me the kind of, it fed my passion in a way that work could not, you know, because work is hard. Yeah. Working bakeries is tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and even the heck, just the opportunity to meet other people in similar situations. So you get that, well, we're not alone kind of thing. Cause it can be very lonely work when it's not going well. Yeah.
Yeah. Or when you're working in the middle of the night, yeah. You know, you've kind of given up a social life and all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And so who are other people that you might want to talk to that, are also awake until about 4 in the afternoon, you know, or 5 in the afternoon.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, and it doesn't hurt that people that seem to get into this tend to come from a lot of different backgrounds. You know, like you were talking about your, you know, formal education before you got into this. And it's like that story comes up again and again and again. So you end up getting very interesting people that would much rather, you know, work around the bench. You know, and it's I'm still trying to figure it out. Brand new for me is like, I just took a part-time job here in Victoria, working at a coffee shop as a prep baker. You were talking about hiring problems, and I went by one day and they were closed, and the sign said, you know, closed due to staffing issues and that. And so I went back the next day. I said, well, what's going on? Like, I like your shop, you know, what can I do? Right. And so I'm working like, you know, 3 mornings a week, just helping them out with production prep and stuff. And I like it a lot. Like it was one of those, you know, it's like, well, I've done all this stuff and I've done my own bakery and bread programs and that, and then just getting back around the bench and this is lovely. Like it's like, oh, you know, and it's like, and I'm sore and I'm tired by the end of it. And it's like, oh yeah. And I'm going back tomorrow, and it's like I can hardly wait. And it's the strangest thing, but it's true, and it doesn't seem to fade. There's joy in actually doing that work. You know,
oh, so much joy.
Yeah.
I envy you that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I used to live in Brooklyn. I'm in Brooklyn today, but
okay.
I live now in upstate New York, and all through the pandemic, I was working fully remote and I'm still working remote. Anyway, so I moved to this tiny town in upstate New York, and unbelievably, there's this incredible bakery, you know, 2 doors away from me. There's nothing in this town.
Yeah.
But there is this very talented baker by the name of Wilson Keenan. And I went over there one day and I said, hey, do you think I could just come work with you occasionally, just so I can be on the bench and have my hands in the dough? And I think he kind of thought, you know, who is this person? But he needed the help. So he said yes. And I did. I only spent a few hours with him because my schedule wouldn't allow it. But it was so nice to be back on the bench and working side by side with someone. And I'll have to say his doughs were very wet and I definitely struggled a little bit with them, but it was such a joyful experience. And I wish I could find an outlet for that. Like you.
Yeah. It's so weird because, you know, I thought when we moved out to the coast and we were able to do that because all the work that I was doing was online. And so I was, you know, I thought, wow, this is great that we can like move location and start up in a new city and I can still keep working and that kind of thing. But after 3 years, you're like, whoa, I don't know. I believe the pendulum swung too far. Oh. And so it's like, okay, time to bring it back. Give me some 50-50 here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So exactly. Cool. Yeah. It's funny what you were saying about people from different backgrounds getting into baking. I have a nephew who's an engineering graduate from Purdue. He's a young man and he's always starting out his career in engineering. And I think he's kind of on the fence about it. And I said, well, you should just go be a baker, because I think I know six engineers who became professional bakers. I said, it's inevitable for you, Ethan. Just leave your engineering world and go be a baker.
And you'll learn in 3 months whether or not it's for you. And if it's for you, then it's a win. And if not, you have engineering. So it's like there's nothing to lose,
there's
right?
No downside.
Yeah. So I'm curious because, you know, I've been a member of the Guild, like I say, since 2008, but I don't really understand how it works. And from that perspective, so, you know, the role of executive director, what's that all about? And I guess, how is it different than the folks on the board?
So the Guild is a small nonprofit organization. It has a designation of a 501c3, which really just refers to our tax status or tax exempt status. But we have a board, as all nonprofits must. You have to have a governing body, and our board is a purely volunteer board. I don't know if you see it in the nonprofit space a whole lot, but you can certainly see paid boards in for-profit corporations. But our board is a volunteer board. And then we have a team, you know, and the team before I came on consisted of Rebecca Miller, who was operations, and Celeste Leal, who was working primarily on finance. And then there were a whole lot of people just volunteering their time to the Guild, both within the board and outside. So there, you mentioned Solveig, she's given a ton of time to the Guild through the years. Melina has, Richard Miskovich. I mean, anybody you can think of probably who's been on your show has probably given some time to the Guild. And so a lot of the work is done through these volunteer committees or solo volunteers. And even in the interim period from the time the last executive director left in January, the board was very hands-on in the operations of the organization, because although we're small, we do a lot. You know, we have 2,700 members and a pretty full docket of programming. And so it's a bit to manage. So everything we do, you know, in terms of our finances, you can see our 990, you can look at our books. You know, we're a $500,000 organization funded through a mixture of membership fees, class fees, and some sponsorships. And I hope to grow all of that, but particularly the fundraising category, the sponsorships and the philanthropy, so that we can make our programming more accessible to everyone, particularly working bakers. And I hope to grow our team so that the core functions of the organization, which include operations, development, communications, and education, are really staffed by the Guild.
Right.
I still want to involve volunteers. I still want that activity and that energy. But I think that we need to build a team for the next phase of the Guild to do the work that we're meant to do. And the board is seven people. We have three leaving at the end of this year. And so we're going through the process to see who will fill their seats. And of course, we involve the membership in that. We look for nominations from the membership, which I will be making another call for soon. And we'll have a process to fill those seats. The board terms are 3 years with a limit of 2 3-year terms.
Yeah.
And the board is just a bunch of people who are willing to give a lot of time, you know, and a lot of effort for not always a whole lot of return.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
it's definitely a from the heart thing.
Yeah.
I like what you're saying, though, about building out sort of a team to execute on a lot of this stuff, because I know, and just from a personal perspective, that's one of the things that it intimidated me a lot about letting my name stand to be on the board, or mm-hmm. considering that, is just sort of like not being clear on the time commitment and not wanting to drop a ball, right? Like I think of what my friend Edna's doing on the communication side and stuff. And I've talked with her a little bit, and it's just sort of like, I don't know that I can commit the time to keep it running, you know, like it's one thing to sort of do it for the first time, but then once you get it sort of operationalized in that and say, well, okay, now that's still mine, I don't know if I can do that, you know, on a volunteer basis.
Yeah. And I don't think the board should be, I don't think the board should be expected to do that. Yeah. I also don't think it's good for the organization because it's hard to create continuity and it's hard to build replicable systems and create institutional knowledge. You know, so Edna is a perfect example. She's been running our social media for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I have taken a crash course in Instagram over the last few months so I can try to take some of that off of her shoulders. And I'm actually looking for communications interns so we can build more support. And then really ask Edna for help with, you know, creating strategy and meeting with funders and where I think her time is much and her expertise is much better used, you know, not creating Instagram posts, which is not to say she's not good at it. She's great at it. But,
no, she's awesome. But, but it runs right in parallel with any bakery that you're trying to grow or at least make sustainable and make resilient, right? Like you, it's, you know, whenever I talk with a bakery owner, it's like, yeah, it's like 3 years they have and all my staff turns over and I have to kind of reinvent the wheel and it's terrible. Like, can we get like, how do I get some resilience here and some continuity and all of that? It's funny. It's all the things that we strive to do at our bakeries. It's like, oh, well, let's do that here too.
Exactly. Let's be a lean, efficient business. You know, we are a nonprofit, but that doesn't mean we're not a business.
For sure. Well, and the thing about a nonprofit is you have this now that you can reinvest and you can do a new thing or expand your programming or whatever form it takes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I always think of it as like, oh, isn't it a relief that we don't have to carve off 15% a year and just push it out of the company, right? You know, we can actually keep it. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Exactly.
And so then, well, and we've already talked a little bit about your goals in terms of, you know, let's bring some resilience in, let's build a team out, let's expand the programming. And maybe I'm curious about that because again, as a member, I've really seen in the last couple of years a real focus on, I'm going to say, inclusion and diversity, but also both in terms of bringing people in, but just the diversity of voices that we're seeing in the classes and in breadlines and across the board. And maybe if you can speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's critical. You know, I think that's really critical for the future of our own organization and the resilience of the guild that we bring in new voices and that we are representative of all the great people out there making bread and running bakeries. And also representative of all the people out there who are working in bakeries, who are quite often people of color and women. I mean, more than 50% of the time, the people filling those jobs on the bench are people of color and women. And so let's bring more of them into the tent, both as participants and as instructors and contributors in really meaningful ways. And this is what we need to do because it is the right thing to do, but I also think it is the thing the guild has to do so that we're around for another 30 years, right? And we don't become an irrelevant kind of dinosaur of an organization. But more than anything, there's just so much exciting stuff happening out there. And I want to make sure that we're capturing all of that.
Yeah.
I was at this event I was at last night. There was it was like a small business pitch competition. So there were five businesses there owned by women of color. And one of them was this Iranian baker. And I just thought she was so cool. She's doing it out of her apartment in Brooklyn and she wants to grow. And she's got some beautiful, unusual things that I've never seen. And I said, I want to bring that to the guild, you know, and I know that our members are interested, you know, in talking with the membership. Since I started, I've made it a goal to talk with members every single week in one format or another and really hear what their interests are. And one theme that I hear again and again is that I want to learn about products outside of the European canon, right? I understand. Yeah. Nothing wrong with the wonderful baguettes and sourdough breads and all of that, but people want to know what's happening in other parts of the world and possibly bring that to their own customers. So I think we have a role in that. We have a role to play in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we can celebrate the Iranian baker making Iranian breads, you know, in my case, in the West Coast of Canada, so much the better, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, my son's living in Glasgow now, going to grad school. And when we went to visit him this summer, he's taking us around his neighborhood and showing us all the cool places. And for him, it's like, yeah, this is, we're going to this Middle Eastern bakery or this Middle Eastern convenience store because they have the best naan breads. And then I'm going to go over here and we're going to get the, you know, the trendy coffee or whatever. It's that, well, what I call it, getting it legit, right? Like I can get the real stuff from the real bakers right where I live. Like this is fantastic, you know? And, yeah. And it is a whole other world. I've even on the podcast, I've tried it a few times talking with folks from different countries and I'm still finding folks in other countries trying to bake really good sourdough breads or really good baguettes. And I'm trying more and more to stretch out and to go to talk to people baking things that I have no idea about,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, exactly. You know, it's like, I have no clue what it's like, please tell me, you know, and that's really what I'm grateful for that. And I'm seeing it in some of the literature, you know, that you're putting out and in the announcements and stuff as well. Right. And just,
yeah.
Even the way that you're listing, oh, here's all the new members sort of every month or every couple of weeks when the emails come out and you just see it's, you know, it's a lot of individuals signing up now and it's, you know, and it seems to be the list is getting a little longer and
yeah.
that's a good thing. You know, there's yeah, some momentum. Yeah.
Yeah. There is some momentum and it's great to see. And I hope it will continue. And I hope that we can find ways to just make it super affordable and accessible. You know, I don't want to have to turn away anyone. And it doesn't cost us a whole lot to give a membership. So, but that's where fundraising comes in and sponsorship. And there was one member actually, Serious Plum Baker, who had a great idea for me, who said, well, why don't you do a fundraiser that's like a buy one, give one, where someone buys a membership, individual membership for themselves, and then gives one to someone else, like maybe a production baker, you know, an Amy's Bread, who wouldn't think to get them that for themselves. So
yeah,
you may see some interesting fundraising like that.
Nice.
Come your way.
Well, yeah. I can vouch for it from, you know, when we had Orange Boot Bakery, and I had like a retail bakery owner level of membership, whatever it's called. And I could give my lead bakers access to that stuff, right? Like there was like a couple associate memberships or whatever, and they could get bread lines or they could get whatever. And they could dip into the formulas in the resource pools and stuff. And it was amazing. Like it was like I find every decent baker just wants to learn more, wants to get exposed to more. And so the more that we can do that, the better, for sure.
Yeah. And I think really showing people that there's a career path in this industry beyond the bench, you know, yeah. So you may have seen we're doing something on November 7th, careers in baking. And so we're going to talk with five folks who have gone beyond the bench, you know, working in ingredients or software or education. And I think that's really critical for people to see too, because life on the bench is not for everyone. And it's not sustainable for a lot of people. You know, when I was doing that, as I said, I was young. I was also single. I didn't have a family. So, you know, you get to a point in your life where you're like, okay, I think I need to earn a little bit more money and work some reasonable hours. And so it's nice to know that there are, for me to know that I could take those skills and grow a career beyond that. And so I want our bakers of today to know that. So they don't leave the industry, because they are leaving the industry.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And doing like radically different things. Like one of our top bakers at Orange Boot, when she had had enough, you know, she worked as reception for a plumbing and heating company for a while till she finally recharged. And now she's back in and killing it as a pastry chef and that.
But, oh, wow.
But it's sort of like, that was so sad. It was sad enough that she left, and it was triple sad that someone with that kind of talent left to get into the plumbing and heating field.
Yeah. And then she's leaving that on the table, you know, all of that experience. I mean, I'm glad she picked it up again, but otherwise you've amassed all that experience and skill, which is, you know, marketable, and you're just kind of leaving that on the table, and that's a loss for her as well.
Yeah. You know? Well, and I did see that note about the November session, and I thought, whoa, now we're talking here, you know. Yeah. Like that was, that looks really interesting.
I think we got 140 people signed up.
Sweet.
So there's going to be a good number there, and I hope it'll grow.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause even back the first Wheatstock I attended in 2012, you know, Philippe Lacour was teaching a class that I took, and, you know, he's working for the Heinz Group, doing some sort of like, you know, ingredient. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, you're this talented baker, and what does the Heinz Group need you for? And where are you getting any kind of fun out of that? And because it's all just a mystery. It was just sort of like, yeah. I never considered it, you know, that would be something, you know, or it's good for people to see something that if it twigs with them,
exactly,
you know, then you can pursue it.
Yeah. And these other parts of the industry are also having a workforce crisis. You know, you look at the equipment folks, the ingredient suppliers, whatever, they're all struggling to find workforce. There's not necessarily a generation of people coming up behind our generation. We need to make sure we're cultivating the workforce of the future.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, and we've already talked a little bit about another big question that I had, and it's just in the general terms, is what's the guild for in 2022? You know, yeah. And you talked about some of the shifts. Maybe let's spend some time on that, because I'm really curious from your perspective, sort of what's the guild for now? Is it changed? How's it changed since, you know, 30 years ago or 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, to sort of give folks a sense of where you're headed?
Yeah. So, you know, when I think, I've been thinking a lot about the guild and what it's meant to me and what it's meant to members of my generation. And I would say the guild educated us, hands down. I would not have become the baker and the teacher that I am if it were not for the guild. I think that there's a lot more education out there these days that folks can access. And absolutely, some of it is garbage, right? And the guild is still the gold standard for education in artisan baking. But I do think there's other channels that people can explore. And so I, as I mentioned before, I do want to expand our programming outside of baking techniques and really look more at the business of baking. Because what you and I probably both know about bakeries is they're often started by people who have a real love for making something and a talent for making that thing, but they don't necessarily have a lot of talent for running a business. And they often become victims of their own success. And I hate to see that. And so maybe with some basic education and how do you create a P&L, how do you figure out what your costs are, you know, and so on, people can run more sustainable businesses. And so when I think about the guild of the next few years, at least, I really think about that piece of it. I really think about creating a resource so that our bakeries can sustain and thrive. And that people who have been in the, whether you've been in the industry for 30 years or you just opened your bakery 3 months ago, you're dealing with the same challenges. And I want the guild to step into that and have a role in helping to solve some of those challenges so that we have these bakeries. You know, I was meeting with this guy this morning. He's an old friend of mine. He operates a bakery in Brooklyn called Runner and Stone. And it, you know, every conversation we have is the same conversation, right? It's every day is the same set of problems. And I know the guild can't solve all of his business's problems, but I think we can help with some of them and ensure that his bakery is still around in another 10 years, because where else am I going to get a baguette of that quality? Nowhere else, right?
Yeah. So. Well, and that's the thing, because when you close, when you finally had enough and you close, that's the day you finally realize how much you're missed in the town that you're in. And that's the big shame, right? Like, that's the biggest shame for me is seeing that pattern repeat. Our businesses may need help, but there's no denying that for the vast majority of bakers, we're doing an actual service for the communities that we're in. So it's like the community loses when you've had enough, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, we bring identity and we bring creativity and we bring soul to our towns and our communities. And I would hate to see all of that replaced by supermarket bread.
Totally.
And some of that is absolutely baking techniques, and the Guild will continue to be very grounded in offering education in those techniques. But I don't think that's enough, and I want us to go beyond that.
So something as simple as, you know, so Stephen Knight was just posted over on Bakers for Bakers about he went through the certification process last weekend, and how amazing that was for him. And he was really enthused about the process that he went through. And I was asking about that on the forums, and he came back and he said, well, somebody watched me for 7 hours, and then they gave me notes about how I could like refine my process, which was already pretty decent. But he was so grateful for refining that process. And I can see it on the business side as well, that just, you know, there's a huge desire, a huge need for, like, I just feel like I'm reinventing the wheel here. How do I, like, there's got to be a better way, or I can't be the first person to have this problem, or how do I get that advice? You know, and that's something that the Guild did for me when I had a bakery in a huge way.
Yeah.
Yeah. More of that, please. Yeah.
I think the Guild, I mean, so the other thing I was talking with my friend Peter about this morning, he worked on a project with me when I was at Hot Bread Kitchen on improving job quality. So we brought together a cohort of bakeries in New York City, and we met regularly to talk about operational and employment practices. And what they all valued most about it was the opportunity to sit in a Zoom or in a real room with a bunch of people facing the same problems and talk about them.
Yep.
And he said he would love to see more of that. And so that's something else that I think about for the Guild is how can we, some of that happens just naturally when we have in-person events, but in the absence of in-person events, how can we create those communities, whether it's virtually and in person, where that happens regularly. And you have that peer-to-peer kind of consulting going on, which is so valuable. Yep. So,
yeah, because like Amy and Leslie Mackey did a So You Want to Open a Bakery course at a couple of the wheat stocks. That was Cindy went to that. We had already opened, but my wife Cindy went to that in 2012. And it's like, yeah, that'll help you get open. And now the real fun begins. There's only 100 more seminars required at this point. yeah. Oh, my heart rate just went up there talking about this, because that's really near and dear to my heart. We call it the business side, but it's all tied in. It's business, it's people, it's communication, it's all of it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting times for sure.
Yeah. And there's strength in numbers. I mean, I think the Guild can do a lot collectively as well. And I'm interested, and that's more blue sky thinking, but things like collective purchasing models or collective HR functions, things that individual bakeries could never afford, you know, an HR person is that something that the Guild can coordinate and offer and provide real tangible supports in that way as well.
Yeah. If my university alumni association can get me 15% off insurance, surely to goodness, the Guild can, you know, like it has a similar clout for something. Like, I don't know for what, for something.
Yeah. 2,700 members. That's a good number.
Yeah.
That's a good number of people.
And the marketers of the world would say tight niche, very tight niche in there. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Oh my God. So cool. I want to be respectful of your time here, but I could talk to you for about another 3 hours. because I already want to get, Karen, but okay, how are we going to do this? Let's get going. What's next? What do you need?
Yeah. Well, next.
Maybe that's the thing. It's like, so what do you need? So I'm excited. I'm thinking there's at least 6 people that are going to hear this that are going to be excited.
So if any of those 6 people are not members, I want to make sure they sign up.
Yeah.
And I want to hear what they're looking for. So right now I have just been on a listening tour. This is the most talking I've done since I started this job, because I've been listening and wanting to hear what the members are looking for and what they need. So I want people to call me. I want them to email me. I want them to tell me that. So I need that. Melina and I are laying out the calendar for 2023, and we need instructors. teachers and we need facilities. So we're looking for that too. And as I said, we're really looking for a diversity of subjects and parts of the country and people to teach. So we're interested in meeting new people. And we're looking for sponsors. So I will just say it right there. We're looking to renew sponsors who've been with us for a while. And we're so grateful for the support that they give us. And we're looking to bring on new sponsors who share our mission, which is to really sustain and grow our industry. So dollars, I guess what I'm saying is we're looking for dollars.
Need some money. It's sad but true. Like, a good lesson for the small bakery owners out there. It's like it's we're all doing this for love, but we need the money to make it work. So,
yeah. We want to be around, right?
Yeah. Well, and one thing that maybe two questions about the scope from an international perspective, because I'm up here in Canada and I've been a member for 15 years and I know the Guild has members from around the world. Maybe if you can speak to that a little bit about the breadth of people that you're trying to connect with.
Yeah. So I actually, in reference to that, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that one of the things we're developing for next year is a Spanish language track of programming. So we're going to try to do at least 2 in-person classes, and then I hope at least 4 virtual sessions fully in Spanish. That is in part because we know that there are a heck of a lot of bread bakers in the US that speak Spanish, and I would imagine in Canada, but it will also start to open doors for us in other parts of the world and help us to connect to both existing members and new members. Mm-hmm. And I see Spanish as, I hope, the first of a few languages that we might adopt. I know when I was working in New York, I worked with a lot of West African bakers who spoke French as a common language. So there's lots of ways we could go. But I think a part of that international reach is language accessibility. Mm-hmm. And I think our Spanish language programming next year will be a great test for us of the market here and outside of the US. But for the membership, you know, we do absolutely have members outside of the US. And I'm Canada. I haven't talked to folks outside of the US much. So I'm hoping to connect to more of our members in other parts of the world and hear what's happening with their bakeries and their businesses and what they'd like to see from the Guild.
Right on. And then I guess maybe the follow-on to that is, what's the deal with the Coup de Monde? Is that still a thing, or is that?
That's a great question.
Is that a thing from the Guild's perspective?
I'll be honest. I don't know if it's a thing in general. I quite honestly don't know a lot about whether there will be a coup again. And I have been talking with the board a bit about the role of the coup in the organization. And, you know, if there is to be another coup, I'll just say it right here. It's not a certainty that the Guild will sponsor a team. I want to make sure, and the board wants to make sure that our resources go toward impacting the largest number of people possible. And I don't know that the coup, the resources dedicated to the coup have always had the kind of return on investment that we hope they would have. I mean, absolutely, the competitors have taught and given a lot back to the Guild, but I don't know if at this moment in time, that's the best place for the Guild to put its resources. But I just don't know if it's happening again. So it may be a moot point. The Mondial Dupont is happening again. And in fact, we have put together a team. This just came together this week. 3 super talented folks in Las Vegas. And they're going to start practicing probably at the first of the year. And it'll be a shared sponsorship between the Guild, the Ambassadors Dupont, and hopefully the employer of 2 of the team members. So
cool.
So we did put that together, and I think it'll be nice to feature them. And one of the members of the team, the Comey, is a young woman from Las Vegas. You have to be under the age of 22 to be the Comey. Yeah, very young. So I'm super excited to have this young woman involved in this. And she's really excited about the industry and brings a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And I hope she can connect us to other young people so we can get them equally excited about the industry.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, not from a good thing, bad thing perspective. I think it's positive, but one of the things that I noticed back 10 years ago or whatever is that the Guild cycle seemed to go along with the Coupe de Monde cycle very tightly. I used to always tease Laverne that if, you know, if Team Canada ever got in, boy, that was going to, there were going to be fireworks going, but, yeah. But the, just, you know, why not? But I can see how, if for a small organization, that can take a lot of attention, maybe put it that way. And so whatever the guild decides, if the coupe ever comes back or whatever, it's just sort of, I like hearing you say, well, let's at least talk about where we could put our attention if we weren't doing that. And what's the trade-off, you know, like it's a good conversation to have for sure.
Yeah. I think we have to look at everything we're doing and saying, what's the impact?
Yeah.
You know, and how does it feed our mission? And so that, you know, we can't, my feeling is we don't take anything for granted, you know, just sure. because we've done it in the past doesn't mean we should necessarily do it again.
Sure.
We just need to look at it and measure the impact of it.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Which is another good lesson back to the smaller bakeries, right? It's like this is the way we do it around here. Works up to a point. And sooner or later, you got to take a look at it. So cool. Yeah. Is there anything that sort of final thoughts you'd want to share?
I mean, I'm so excited to be in this role and with this organization that I've known and loved for decades. And I really credit it with a lot of my own professional success. And I hope that I can do for other bakers what the Guild did for me and has done for me. And so I'm just thrilled and I'm excited for the possibilities and the opportunities. That's really it. 23 is going to be a great year. And I think we're in for another great 3 decades. It's our 30th anniversary year near next year. So wow. It's a big one.
Wow. Yeah. That's so neat. Well, I'm excited too, Karen. Thanks. Thanks so much for taking the time to come and do this. This has been great.
Thank you.
Well, that was fun. I really enjoyed the talk. I think it's a good thing to talk with folks like Karen and to talk with the people that are trying to, you know, push forward in terms of advocating for bakers and educating bakers and bakery owners and that kind of thing. And to talk with them more often because things change and the organizations change with the times. And so it's good to get an update as to where, what they're thinking and where they're headed. And it was nice to do a little bit of a proper talk with Karen and not just talking about her current role, because she has played a very important role and been a big contributor to the bread scene and the baking scene in the States and across North America over the years. And so it was a lot of fun. I'm inspired. It's not that I was thinking seriously about my guild membership, but certainly after talking with Karen, I'm jazzed up for the renewal when it comes in the mail in a couple of months. Hey, so I should probably mention this show, the Rise Up podcast and the community that goes along with the podcast called bakers4bakers.org. That's bakers with the number 4bakers.org. It's 100% listener supported. It's a small donations, recurring donations from listeners just like you that keep the show afloat and pay for all the tech and all the hosting and all of that stuff. And I really do appreciate it. There's a small but vital group of people that contribute a few dollars a month to keep this thing going, and every little bit helps. So if you want to be a supporter of the show, all you have to do is go to riseuppod.com and click the support the show button. And it'll take you through a couple steps, and it's really easy to do. And you can leave a small donation to keep the show afloat. And while you're there, check out the 170 or more. There's more than 170. There's almost 180 episodes that are all there. The whole show archives is there for you. If you've missed some of the early stuff, you want to go back and re-listen, it's all there for you. And you can download them again, put them on your phone, listen to them on the website, however you want to do it. So head over to riseuppod.com, click the support the show button, check out the archives. There you have it. Until next week, have a great week. Work hard, bake lots, take care of yourself, get some rest. Happy baking. Bye-bye.